On this episode of That Was a Show.
I don't remember that from before.
Some of these might be different in the opening sequence.
I feel like they are, but like you have them with a blow up doll.
And the checkerboard squares thing with all these hilariously zany moments.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Holy cow. Jason Bateman has such a strangely mature face.
Yeah, he does.
It was a Dregs of Humanity reference on that newspaper.
Was there? Oh my God, that's hilarious.
That's funny. Talent contest.
It's a talent contest, and he's going to perform his way out of this jam.
We grew up during peak sitcom, Seinfeld, Friends, The Fresh Prince. But those shows were diamonds in the rough. This podcast is not about those diamonds. It's about the rough. Some sitcoms were briefly popular in their time. Some were canceled almost immediately. You probably won't recognize most of these, and you'll ask, that was a show?
That was a show?
The podcast about failed or forgotten sitcoms from the 80s and 90s, starring
Bryn Burney,
Aaron Yeager,
and Andrew Helmer as Barry.
A Radio Gizmo production.
Welcome, Twas listeners, to a special bonus episode of That Was a Show. Barry is sitting this one out for today. It's just me and Bryn, and we've decided to do a bonus episode, trying out a new format here, where we're revisiting a sitcom that we reviewed in a much earlier episode of our podcast. So Bryn chose the show. What did we just watch?
Yeah, Aaron, you're being so formal for what this is. This is really just like very much an experimental episode where we're just kind of chilling and revisiting one of our old favorites from the Twas library. We revisited It's Your Move, which some of you loyal listeners might remember as the short-lived 1984 sitcom starring teenaged Jason Bateman. We reviewed it for episode 17. So if you guys haven't listened to the episode, please go back and listen to it because we had like a very fun time chatting about it. And so Aaron and I just, you know, in this kind of like idea of let's just like try to do an impromptu episode, just the two of us, where it's late on a Sunday night and we're just gonna have a little fun riffing here.
I know it's my instinct to always go formal. Don't worry, I'll loosen up as we go along.
Yeah, well, we were just like, oh, let's just like watch one of the shows we wanted to rewatch and one that we thought was really odd and might be fun.
Yeah. Little refresher here. So It's Your Move is, of course, where Jason Bateman plays a kid who's always pulling schemes and tricks and hustles. And he's kind of sparring with his next door neighbor, played by David Garrison, who you might know from Married with Children as the next door neighbor. And so
he's just the next door neighbor in everything.
And
he
he's the next door neighbor in this show, too. So that's like the main premise of the show is that they're always kind of as a teenager and a grown ass man having these.
They have a weird rivalry.
Rivalry. Yeah.
It's a rivalry to like con each other. And they're always trying to like pull schemes and one up each other. And the other part of it that's weird is the fact that David Garrison's character, Norman, is actually dating Jason Bateman's character's mom.
Yeah.
So it's like a really odd dynamic.
Because, of course, in a sitcom, there had to be a single mother. So.
Yes.
You have to have that.
I mean, Jason Bateman is thoroughly precocious. Like, he is very, like, he's a very, like, bright kid and very, But he uses his powers and his intelligence for evil, basically.
Yeah.
Like, he's very manipulative and a con artist. In this episode, you know, like we were like, okay, let's watch a later episode in the series because we wanted to find out more. Like for our previous go at this sitcom, we watched the pilot and we watched like the epic two-parter, The Dregs of Humanity,
which we all enjoyed. Like
we all enjoyed it.
We thought that was a lot of fun.
Very, very thoroughly. And again, if you want to know more about that particular two-part episode, go back to our episode 17.
Yeah,
and
just
check
go back
it out
and watch it.
Yeah, or listen. Well, listen to our episode and
watch the show.
And if you can find it, please watch it because it's very fun.
It's fun, and it cannot be overstated that Jason Bateman at like 15 or 16 is immediately recognizable as Jason Bateman.
Yeah,
because he has like, in some ways, a very mature face, and his acting style and physicality and delivery of the lines is like immediately recognizable as the Jason Bateman of today.
Yeah, definitely. It's very funny and weird to watch it as people who are very used to watching him in middle age. But it's the same delivery of everything. Like this is the same line delivery, the same mannerisms, everything. He's just like a little fresh-faced teenager.
Honestly, if you've watched Ozark,
yeah,
you're just gonna be like, yeah, this is basically the same character as a teenager.
Yeah, it's really weird. Yeah, so I guess like generally we liked It's Your Move. Like that was like our last reading of it. It's like we all we're like, okay, it's not like a good show because a lot of these aren't good shows, but we were very like having like too much fun talking about it for us to say that we didn't like it, you know?
Oh, and this reminds me, we actually watched yet another episode back in our first go through right. of It's Your Move after they had retooled the show to sand all the edges off the character because apparently like in our deconstruction of it at the time and with Bryn's research, discovered that there were like, I guess, parent and teacher groups or something that came after the show for being a bad influence on kids.
Yeah.
So they converted his character from like this guy who's always getting away with schemes and possibly even like borderline criminality into like a much more moral, positive influence. And then after that, the show just makes no sense.
But then where does this comes after The Dregs of Humanity, right? This is pre-retool.
I think this is
pre-retool because the retool was the second season.
Yeah, this episode would be after Dregs of Humanity and probably one of the last, if not the last, before the retool.
Yeah, because like he is like a little sociopath. And
oh, he's a sleazeball.
In
a way that, you know, to the extent that a 16-year-old can be a sleazeball, he's a sleazeball.
Right.
So quick rundown of the plot of this episode.
Yeah, go for it.
It's very simple. So we are introduced in this episode to a character who presumably is in several episodes. But,
well, he was in the episode of season 2 that we watched last time because he's the principal.
Yeah, the principal of the school who is in the post-retool episodes as well.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I don't seem to recall him being part of the pilot or The Dregs of Humanity.
No, I don't think he
but
was.
In any case, he's clearly become a much bigger character. Yeah. So he's like a main part of the cast. So we have Jason Bateman playing Matt Burton. We have David Garrison playing Norman Lamb. We have Ernie Sabella playing Lou Donatelli, who seems to be like the building superintendent.
Yeah,
in the
he's
apartment
their,
building.
Their super or landlord or whatever. Yeah.
And he's very reminiscent of like Jerry and Kramer's super on Seinfeld, like the kind of comb over head, greasy, shady
comb over that's ever been a comb over.
Yeah. And
it's gross.
And then the principal, played by Garrett Morris, Principal Dwight Ellis, who is clearly a main character in this episode.
Yeah.
So the plot is pretty simple. David Garrison's character, Norman Lamb, he and the principal are hanging out. We understand that Norman Lamb is a teacher and they're friends and they're hanging out. And they're both kind of griping about how they don't get paid very well as teachers.
Yeah.
Very true.
Which is very true. Yeah. Still true today.
Still true today.
Yeah, in the United States.
legitimately huge problem and really reasonable thing to see them griping about. And then they find out that Lou Donatelli, the super, owns a boat. And they're like, you know, with all due respect, how can you afford a boat? And he explains that he got a stock tip from Jason Bateman's character, Matt, and made lots of money on this amazing stock tip.
So we're supposed to believe that on top of being a brilliant con artist, apparently teenaged Matt is also an investment guru as well.
Yeah, he's also apparently reading financial markets like, there's so many 80s movies that go into the stock market.
Yeah.
So that's obviously like extremely timely for 1984.
It's tropey.
Very tropey in and of itself.
Yeah.
But yeah, so apparently he's like a brilliant investment guru. So obviously then what happens is Norman Lamb and the principal, they just try to get him to give them stock tips so that they can make money. And he tells them to invest in Swiss francs.
Which seems very random. Like Swiss francs. And they're skeptical. Like they are skeptical. They're like, oh, I don't know about that.
But
like,
he was right.
He was right. Okay.
And the Swiss franc does immediately start to do really well. And initially they're making money off of this investment.
Yeah.
And they're making so much money. Well, so much money. They're making like a couple thousand bucks.
Yeah.
That they decide they want to celebrate and go to a club.
They want to paint the town together.
Paint the town a very dull, muted red. So.
Yeah. So, okay, so basically they decide to go out to some, like, nightclub together and, like, have, like, a wild boys' night. And again, this is just Norman and Dwight. It's not teenage Matt. So, basically, yeah, they decide that they're gonna do this. We should also say that Matt had advised them to sell because he caught wind of this like fact that it's gonna go down, so like the franc is gonna go down, which is apparently in opposition to what the experts in the
on the news
on
or
the
on
news
TV
or whatever are saying.
So he says, give me my 20% now then.
Yes. Yeah.
And then you guys are on your own.
Yeah. Yeah. So he's like knows something they don't know. And so, yeah. So the guys are like not, they're just flying high from their extra
$1,250.
Basically, they go to this nightclub, and when they say like they're gonna go out to a club, I'm expecting some like neon 80s cliche
dancing, booze,
discotheque, as Aaron called it earlier when we were watching. That's what I was picturing. But we go there, and it's like this classy jazz joint.
Yeah, a very like, low key, dignified sitting down at tables,
like an old school. Yeah, they're sitting down at tables and watching the live
which
music,
which honestly looked like a great place. I'd love to go
it
there.
It did. I wanted to go back in time and go to that place for sure. And so they're being obnoxious, and they're buying rounds for the house, and they like which is kind of nuts because it's like even if you did have like a little mini windfall, you're not necessarily going to go into a club and like ball out of control like that. Like you're not necessarily going to be like, hey, I'm just going to buy drinks for everybody.
Yeah.
So it's a little contrived, a little silly. And on top of the live music that's happening, there also happens to be an amateur night. And what is an amateur night but a talent show?
Yep, which talent contest.
Which is one of the biggest tropes of like 80s sitcoms.
$100 cash prize.
Yes, exactly. So there's like this weird like amateur night going on but in the backdrop of what's happening. And also throughout their little meal night out, they are informed by Dwight's broker.
Who we have to say rushes over to the nightclub to confront them about this in person.
Yes. Which is wild because it's like, how would he know that they're there? Like, I don't understand.
How would he know that
they're
there?
Didn't he explain that? Maybe he did
and
in the scene.
And why would
he
care? Like, from the perspective of a professional broker, their situation is so minor.
Yeah, but he was looking out for them, I guess.
Yeah, I guess
like,
so.
Like, I guess he was, like, in his mind, he was like, oh, I gotta make this right, or whatever.
And I gotta say, I actually thought it was hilarious how into the weeds on this they got.
Yeah.
Because you'd think that this was from the movie The Big Short.
Yeah.
Because it turns out, so he comes in and says, like, I gotta let you guys know that the Swiss franc is, like, tanking. and I need you to give me $500 right now. And they're like, why? And he's like, that's the amount for the margin call, which is the most esoteric thing for a sitcom to go into the idea of a margin call.
Yeah.
Because apparently they bought Swiss francs on margin, which I'm not going to go any further into the weeds on that. But that's
I don't understand any of these words.
It basically means that they borrowed money.
Yeah.
To invest. Like they did the investment in a way where it's like it's options markets. So it's like a side bet. It's not like buying shares in something or buying Swiss francs. It's a bet on whether the franc is going to go up or down.
Okay.
Think of it as a bet in Vegas on like the horse track or something. So basically the $500 margin call, think of it as like a bookie fee. If they don't pay the $500, they lose literally everything.
Yeah.
So the Swiss franc might have only gone down 5%, but if they don't pay the $500, they lose 100%.
Yeah.
Which is such a weird thing to go into in a sitcom, especially since, like, you know, the only reason I was it took me a long time to be able to give that very basic explanation. Like, it's a pretty, like, off the rails thing for them to go into. But I found that pretty funny because it is such a, like, 80s thing.
Yeah. So basically he comes in and he's like, oh, it's tanking. It's tanking. I need like the $500 from you like right now. And you know, he gives him, how much does he give him? He gives him like,
I don't,
it was getting very confusing. The numbers were getting very confusing.
They gave him, they gave him the $500.
Right.
For the margin call.
Yeah.
But what that meant was that when their bill came, they were cleaned out. They had like $6 left. So when the bill came at the club and they bought multiple rounds for the entire place.
Yeah. They had this big bill that was like 300 and some odd dollars, which that's reasonable.
Yeah. When you see the size of the club, you're like,
by today's standards, that's quite reasonable.
It's not bad. I mean, even if you correct for inflation.
Yeah.
Not a horrible detail.
A lot of swanky places here in Toronto. That bill would not go very far.
Yeah. So
that would be a few drinks for a few people.
So they don't have any money. So what do? They call Jason Bateman's character to, Matt.
Matt.
To come down.
Use his name, Aaron.
Use his name. They call Matt to come down to the club and lend them back the money that was his cut of what they had given him before.
Yeah.
To cover the bill, but they're still $100 short. And guess what? The talent contest for amateur night has a $100 cash prize. So now their scheme is going to be to do an impromptu performance on stage to try to win the talent contest.
And for some reason, they call what's his name to come, the super Lou Donatelli. They call him down because he has to be there.
I think they called him down because they thought maybe he could like lend them more money.
Yeah.
And,
they did. I guess they were like, between the two of you, this is all they have. And because maybe they thought he had some responsibility in it because he's the one who recommended having Matt give them the stock tip. So anyway, it's a whole contrived, silly thing. The whole reason is to get what's his name down there to be a creep as well. Like they have Lou and he's telling all these random women that he's a producer, which is supposed to be like a line or something.
I guess.
I don't know. It's weird. But yeah, so basically they do an impromptu performance of the classic song Midnight Train to Georgia. And
they sell it. Like,
yeah, they sell it. So
it's not bad.
Dwight himself is quite good and he's singing lead and Lou and
Norman
are singing backup and they're goofy. Like they're not good. They're off key.
Goofy dance moves.
But they're like getting into it.
Yeah.
So
let's be honest. If it was a karaoke bar, they would have crushed.
Yeah, they would have had the whole crowd like, you know, like going. But so they do their little impromptu performance and, you know, they're just like waiting with bated breath and they call everyone out on the stage that has performed. And it's all these stupid costumes. Like it's like because we haven't as the audience, we haven't seen all the different performances. The one performance that we did see, which was wild, like earlier in the episode, which is the thing that sets up the fact that it's an amateur contest, is this guy doing these chair tricks where he's basically picking up chairs with his teeth.
Yeah.
And balancing them in various like configurations.
Which, by the way, I feel like that's also some sort of like vaudevillian thing.
Yeah.
And considering how we just talked about stuff like that on One of the Boys.
Yeah.
It's funny to
see.
The
One of the Boys episode. Yeah.
Another 80s sitcom that's going into that kind of like show business stuff.
It's almost like we need to like wedge in some zany performance. And we have to find a way to do that. Like, we need to get some random esoteric performer to come here and do some sort of, like gimmicky trick. Because that's just, like, what every sitcom needs. You just need... That's part of the formula, apparently.
Yeah.
So they have this guy doing this crazy chair trick. And we're just like, what is happening? Like,
And that guy won.
And which he should... Like,
deservedly
rightly
so.
Won, yeah. Right? And then... So they're bummed out. They don't got their $100. But suddenly, miraculously, Matt swoops in as the deus ex machina. And he... has their extra $100 that they need, so that, you know, their butts are saved.
Yeah, because he booked them to
Aaron, you're setting it. You're not setting it up well. We gotta, like, you know. So they're like relieved, but the weird thing is, and the final payoff of the episode is that he has booked them for another gig, and then that's it. That's where it ends.
2 weeks. Doing the gig.
Yeah. So they have to perform, you know, Midnight Train to Georgia again or some other thing.
Yeah, several times at some other club, I guess.
Oh, my God. It's so, so silly.
Yeah. Now, there's also a major point that we neglected to describe.
Right.
Which is the subplot in this episode.
Oh, yes.
So Matt, who is 16, mind you.
Yeah.
While all of this is happening.
Yeah.
A running gag that happens repeatedly is that he brings these girls that I guess he meets at school back to his apartment. He has classmates. Yeah. Brings these girls back to his apartment.
One by one.
So at the beginning of the episode, when we said that like Norman Lamb and the principal want to get the stock tip from him, they burst into his apartment and he's in the middle of trying to seduce this girl.
Oh, it's gross that you're saying seduce.
That's what the scene is.
Yeah.
Gross scene.
So he's basically trying to put a move on this girl.
But he's doing these lines.
He's
like,
using these lines.
I've changed
all the cons, all the, you know, all the schemes.
All the other girls.
All the
you're
other
the
girls,
only
you're
one
the
for
only
me.
One. And he says, the night is ours. And then he like leans in for a kiss. And then they burst in.
They burst in.
And this happens two more times. With two different girls.
And each time, the way that they get the girl to leave is where the principal basically confronts her about, like, so I guess you've done all your homework and that's why you have the free time to be hanging out here.
So it's kind of cute. But every time, like, the girls are, it's gross. Like, it's really gross and it's very much a 1984 thing.
Yeah. And he uses the exact same lines.
The girls are rightly,
on each girl.
Yes, the girls are rightly skeptical and, like, not entirely comfortable being there, which is gross, but it is 1984.
Each time they lean in for a kiss and then get interrupted.
They do, because he, you know, lays these lines on them and ends his, like, little soliloquy with, oh, the night is ours. The night is ours. Like, who does he think he is?
Yeah. Now, and how does he keep, like, attracting these girls?
I don't know. He's like a creep. He's like, you know, like those pickup artists, like he's using his powers for evil.
So basically he knows how to read financial.
He's very manipulative.
He knows
like
how to read
everybody.
He knows how to read financial markets and he's able to like manipulate and seduce women.
It's
and, you know, apparently book gigs for people.
Yes.
And, which actually, I guess, is what happened in The Dregs of Humanity, too.
Yeah. He's basically like that character from Licorice Pizza, if you think about it. Yeah, he's basically, what's the kid's name in Licorice Pizza? He's like Valentine. What's his first name? Anyway, he's that character. He's very much like very precocious, very wheeling and dealing and like trying to like, you know, seduce women yeah. and girls, and it's gross and very, very 1984, yeah. very inappropriate.
So there are some things in this yeah. episode, you know,
that don't hold up.
They don't hold up, and they're very cringy.
Yeah.
But I mean, the episode went by real fast.
Yeah,
it did. Were we entertained? Yeah. Yes.
We were entertained.
If we're answering honestly,
yes,
we were entertained.
This was a funny and fun thing to do randomly on a Sunday night is like watch this like silly show.
Yeah.
But now I'm like, I feel very invested. Like, I feel like I'm going to have to see every single scheme, as gross and like ethically dubious as it all is. I do want to see like a lot of his like schemes, like throughout the series. Like, I do yeah. want to see.
Well, and I mean, this you know. Show is kind of, we'll call this that like dark comedy subgenre of sitcom, yeah. not unlike Married with Children, where, you know, it's got that and it comes from the same sort of team.
Yeah.
Where obviously a lot of the jokes and a lot of the character traits are very anti-hero stuff.
Yeah.
Which in sitcom land, at least at that time, was relatively
like
rare.
Like a primetime mainstream network sitcom. This was very rare. And so was like the characters in Married with Children.
Yeah.
So that's kind of why they gave the creators license to do yeah. this kind of show, but right? They had faith in them. But it was weird and off-putting to people, especially when it's a teenager.
Yeah, it works better with Married with Children because the worst character traits are carried by a very dopey middle-aged man.
Yes.
And so it's yeah. easier to say, okay, we get that we're supposed yeah. to loathe this guy.
Yeah.
But you're right. It's like when it's a 15, 16-year-old, it's a little like rattling
yeah.
to see them behave this way. But, you know, it worked in The Dregs of Humanity.
Yeah.
The particular plot of that two-parter is yeah. like a good way to use that style of humor.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a weird, this particular show sits in a weird zone where it's like not quite far enough, but it's too far for the medium and like the network that it's on. So
yeah.
it's in a weird, like, I feel like it's the type of show that could have a better life now where they go all the way with it and make it as dark as possible.
Yeah. If you rebooted this show now,
yeah,
you could do some crazy stuff with this.
You really could. You really could. I don't know.
And honestly, make Jason Bateman the dad. If you rebooted this show and had Jason Bateman as a single father who had a kid.
Yeah.
And they do schemes together.
Yeah.
Like father-son grifters.
Yeah.
That would be hilarious.
Yeah, it obviously seemed to be quite a theme in the sort of Married with Children universe, right? Like the grifting and hustling.
Yeah.
Because, you know, while like Al Bundy himself was not really a grifter, Peg was kind of a grifter. Like, she was always pulling one, you know,
yeah.
the wool over Al's eyes and trying to like, you know, and then what we saw in the two failed spinoffs of Married with Children, what was it? Top of the Heap.
Yep.
And what was the other one? Oh, Vinny and Bobby.
Yeah, both with Matt LeBlanc.
Both with Matt LeBlanc playing Vinny Verducci.
Yeah.
There was this whole plot of like conning there as well. Like,
yeah.
So it's like a very odd thing. Like, I really wonder. So it's like Ron Leavitt and who's the other creator? You're hearing this in real time, guys. So again, it's like not so polished here. Let's go back.
While you're looking that up, I'm going to reemphasize that for some reason at that time, this trope of plots involving putting on some sort of stage show seems to come up so much. And like
yeah.
that was a big part.
It's
so
weird. Variety shows.
Variety show. So if you haven't listened to our It's Your Move episode, which I highly encourage that you do, the Dregs of Humanity thing that we keep bringing up involves like a school talent show, but like in a really funny way. Like, that's a legitimately crazy off the wall plot. But yeah, just like as a trope, I cannot believe how many shows in the 80s involve people putting on shows or talent show things, performances on stages. And usually in some sort of impromptu way.
Yeah, it's always, yeah, there's always a weird variety show. It's, yeah. Okay, so the other creator is Michael G. Moy. So it's Michael G. Moy and Ron Levitt. And I'm so curious now. I feel like I need to do a deep dive. Like, what is their history with this? Like, were they fascinated with people who are hustlers? Or was that somehow in their background? Like were their dads kind of like hustlers or like one of them? I don't know. I'm just so fascinated.
Right. So you're thinking it's kind of like Larry David, where there's something in one of their pasts where they just know that world.
There's got to be, you know, like I feel like anyone who's like creative and, you know, creates stories and characters, like there's always something. There's always something from their life that's sort of like in there. Some ongoing fascination, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I'm always like writing about characters who have complicated relationships with their hometowns and like have to like move back or left a small town to move to a big city. And it's like, it's always creeps in. It always ends up in my,
rural-urban divide.
Yeah, so it's like, it's such a thing, right? And maybe not everyone's like that. Maybe some people just have a fascination with something that they can't let go. And of course, the whole, like, the scenes with Jason Bateman as Matt trying to, like, get into these young girls' pants and, like, they keep it innocent. Like, the implication is that he's trying to kiss them and make out with them. Like, it doesn't seem to be implying that it's going to go farther than that, but it's still gross because he is manipulating them. He is like, which is not something that's
cool. It's
gross
because of what he's saying and how he's saying it.
And he's saying the same lines over and over again.
And the fact that, each time, the fact that the same, like, perfectly rehearsed lines.
Yeah.
But also, like, the way that it's delivered is in such a way, like, my read on it as in the audience is that we're supposed to find it creepy.
Yeah.
We're not supposed to find him like, oh, he's so cool. And look how attractive these girls find him. Like, no. I'm pretty sure we're supposed to find it gross.
Yeah.
And so that's why I say, like, it's interesting to see a show at that time in a primetime sitcom that has like an anti-hero.
Yeah.
Because he's a full-blown anti-hero.
Yeah.
Like everything he does is like, wow, this is not a good dude.
Yeah.
But he's, you know, from an acting perspective, honestly, it's very impressive. Like all of them across the board are doing great performances of these characters. Yeah. That's for sure. Like David Garrison really makes me laugh.
Yeah.
He just does.
He is very funny. He's very, very funny.
He just does.
Yeah. And like the duo, like I do really enjoy the like the addition of Dwight. They're a funny duo. Garrett Morris plays off of David Garrison really well.
Really well.
So they're a fun duo. Like they are a very fun duo.
They are. Like I see them and I'm like, this plot's dumb, but I would sign up to watch the two of them do scenes again and again.
Yeah.
Like I would love to airlift them out of this and into a different show.
Oh my God. I'm surprised they didn't try to do a spin-off of that with the two of them. I don't know.
Because they're great. Like there's real comedy charisma.
Yeah.
And also Jason Bateman bouncing off of them is fun too.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole thing is fun,
but they're like,
it's weird, but
like,
it's fun.
It is a very like womenless episode as well.
Oh yeah.
Like it's already a very misogynistic series. Like the whole thing is gross. Like the women are like two dimensional. They're either a shrew or like a very accommodating, objectified, beautiful angelic woman, like which is like the mother character. And then there's like the sister character who is basically the shrew.
Yeah.
And she's featured once as like one moment.
Has one line.
Yeah, one line in the entire episode where she's just being bitchy and dumping cereal on, you know, the on two characters. And it's just so silly.
Basically, like even at the nightclub, like all the performers on stage are dudes.
Yeah. It's a very bro-y.
It's a very bro-y show.
Episode.
Ernie Sabella as Lou the Super. is funny. It's a very cliche character.
Yeah.
But I mean, he does that cliche well.
He does. Yeah. I mean, it is. It's all like formulaic, but it all makes sense. Like, it all tracks. Yeah. Everyone's doing what they do best.
Yeah.
Basically.
So I guess we should probably check in with Mr. Producer to see if he has any new thoughts on revisiting this show.
Yeah, why not?
We're sorry, the number you have dialed is not in service at this time.
Well, that didn't work out.
Yeah, hopefully we can catch up with him again on the next show. Much like with Married with Children, I appreciate how almost like brutally realistic the production design is.
Yeah.
Like,
I
the
agree
look
with
of
that.
The apartments.
Yeah.
Even the nightclub felt quite real. Like, for a sitcom set, it felt like a much more modern show.
Yeah.
In the way of, like, it's not a single cam show, but it feels much more immersive into that environment. Like, you're actually at a jazz club and not some sitcom set. Like, I was impressed with that.
Yeah.
You know, they pulled off, like, this concept, if this is the concept you're going with, they pulled it off well.
Speaking of pulling things off, I think we pulled off a pretty good impromptu episode here, Aaron.
We did.
And with that, maybe we should say goodnight.
Probably. Do you have any final thoughts about the experience of revisiting this show after like a year?
Just that it was kind of fun, and I think it might be fun for us to try to revisit other episodes. And maybe all of you out there who are listening, if you want to like let us know whether you like this revisit, just let us know. Is there a specific show that we've covered that you'd like us to revisit?
Yeah, tell us what to go back and rewatch.
Yeah, because we'll do it. You know, we have no shame. We'll do it.
Yeah. Email us or post a message on Instagram. Just, you know, come at us with your ideas. This was a fun concept to go back and look at this show again. And Barry, we miss you, and we look forward to you joining us for the next episode.
This was a noticeable, there was a noticeable absence here. We miss our partner in arms, but, you know, he needed a night off. So we will catch up with him, and, we'll be back together in our normal format soon.
And cut to credits. That Was a Show is created and hosted by Bryn Burney, Andrew Barry Helmer, and myself, Aaron Yeager. It's a production of Radio Gizmo in Toronto, Canada. Subscribe, rate, review, and share. Follow us on Instagram and tell your friends about it. That Was a Show.
Radio Gizmo.